The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 7, Text Number 12, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on April 8, 2007, in Hohenstein, Germany.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 7, Further Inquiries by Vidura, Text Number 12. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Savai nivritti dharmena vasudevanukampaya bhagavad bhakti yogena chirodateshanariha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment. Purport. The quivering quality of material existence, which comes from identification with matter, or from thinking oneself under the material influence of philosophical speculation to be God, can be eradicated by devotional service to the Lord, by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. As discussed in the first canto, because the application of devotional service to Lord Vasudeva invites pure knowledge, it quickly detaches one from the material conception of life and thus revives one's normal condition of spiritual existence, even in this life, and frees one from the material winds which cause one to quiver. Only knowledge and devotional service can elevate one towards the path of liberation. The development of knowledge for the purpose of knowing everything without rendering devotional service is considered fruitless labor, and one cannot get the desired result by such labor of love. Lord Vasudeva is pleased by devotional service only, and thus his mercy is realized by association with pure devotees of the Lord. Pure devotees of the Lord are transcendental to all material desires, including the desire for the results of fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. If one wants to acquire the mercy of the Lord, he has to associate with pure devotees. Such association alone can, by degrees, release one from the quivering elements. Om Agyanati Madandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. This verse and purport is another wonderful example of the poetic quality of Bhagavad philosophy. We're reading today about quivering in the wind. It's quite an interesting poetic way of describing the position of someone who is trapped within the three modes of material nature. So this devotional service frees us from the quivering elements, the quivering quality of material existence. That quivering is like a trembling. I remember there was one European philosopher. He had one very dry philosophical work called Fear and Trembling. So this is the actual position of material existence. We're in a very quivering, trembling sort of situation where at any minute disaster may strike. In other words, there is no solid position within this material existence. The illusion of solidity is there. We have our big, big civilizations, our big, big countries, our big, big governments, big, big nuclear weapons, big, big insurance policies and automobiles and, you know, so many things to give us the illusion of being solidly situated here. Apartment buildings, central heat, you know, one thing after another to make us feel that, yes, now we are solidly situated. But actually, there is no solidity here. There is simply quivering. The only solid position is the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, from many, many angles of vision, this is a very unsteady position, you see. Just like this table is unsteady, not solidly situated on the floor, it rocks back and forth, you see. So that is the position, this material existence. If one thinks that he can have a permanent situation here, then he's deluded, actually, simply deluded. Because every time Mahavishnu inhales, the whole thing is finished. There's actually a very nice story given by Prabhupada in this connection. There was one yogi. He was standing by the bank of the river doing his meditation. Some kind of yogic austerity he was doing. And the villagers, the pious villagers, naturally, they want to give all respect to the sadhu. So they were saying, well, this sadhu, he's undergoing so many difficulties. There's the heat of the sun, there's the rain. We would like to build this sadhu a hut so he can be comfortably situated here, you see, in our, the vicinity of our village. He can do his austerities very peacefully, comfortably. So they offer the sadhu this, the hut. And this sadhu is a very unique sadhu, actually. He had a benediction that he would live for an entire lifetime of Brahma for every hair on his body. I mean, it was an incredible benediction. And it should also be noted in this connection, this sage was very, very hairy. He had many, many hairs. So he had received such benediction that he would have such tremendous lifespan. And when the villagers offered him the hut, he said, oh, why bother? I'm only here temporarily, you see. He had very good realization of the quivering nature of this material existence. So this is very important that we understand the quivering nature. Actually, in material existence, people become very morose when, as they gradually get older, and you know, they start to lose their hearing, their seeing, their balance. You know, gradually everything goes away with old age. You lose it little by little. You start losing everything. The materialistic person, he becomes very morose when he becomes old man. But actually, for a devotee, it's a wonderful blessing. Because it simply reconfirms the realization of the quivering nature of this material existence. we have a tendency in the illusion state of consciousness to invest our consciousness in the material energy. But it's really a bad investment. I mean, it just doesn't pay off. It's really a rotten investment. So as one matures in Krishna consciousness, you gain more and more practical realization that it's useless to, you know, invest anything in the material nature. Really useless. It becomes more and more obvious. You just have to put everything in, put all of your eggs into one basket, so to speak. Pure devotional service. Complete shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Because there's no other solid position. In any other position, you're going to quiver. You're going to quiver. So it's very nice. The winds will cause one to quiver. So it's emphasized here, the association of pure devotees. So this is actually the purpose of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada, the greatest pure devotee, the supreme master of masters, Prabhupada, his vision was to create a society of pure devotees. In fact, he even said like that, in the devotees in the early days, they were walking with Prabhupada in Golden Gate Park. He said, Swamiji, how many pure devotees are there on the planet? Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? That was his vision, a society of pure devotees, you see. So this is actually a society. The whole idea is that anyone who becomes associated with this society, they will get the association of pure devotees, and they will become a pure devotee just by the power of Sangha. Sangat sanjayate kama. One's consciousness is formed, is developed, is actually created by what they associate with, by who they associate with. So, this is a wonderful facility that Srila Prabhupada has given. Prabhupada, in the beginning of his purport, is elaborating on what causes the material existence to quiver. It is from the identification with matter, or on a more subtle plane, as the Mayavadis. They will not identify with matter, but they will identify with God. Either one is a quivering position, quivering situation. If I think I'm not matter, but I am the Supreme Lord, that is also a quivering position. Both types of quivering positions will be eradicated or rectified by devotional service. And the word that Prabhupada uses is eradicated. In other words, you want to wipe out this quivering nature. Eradicate it, you know, expunge it, get rid of it. It's a wonderful word here, eradicate it. Just like when we pass still, we want to get rid of it, you know, get rid of it. This foul, disgusting stuff, get rid of it. So this is stool, this quivering quality, to either identify with the material existence, gross plane, I am this body, or I am God. Either one is disgusting. It must be gotten rid of, eradicated. Another interesting word that Prabhupada is using here, the application of devotional service to Lord Vasudeva invites pure knowledge. That word invites is quite an interesting word in this connection. Normally invite, well, you invite someone to come to the Sunday feast or someone over to your home, just like you invite me to come to Germany, you see. This is called invite. That's how we normally use the word invite. But here in Prabhupada's typical poetic style, he's using the word invite. You invite pure knowledge by engaging in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada is truly the embodiment of all 26 qualities of the Vaishnava. One of those is poetic. Kavi. Not only was he poetic in his language, but absolutely everything about Srila Prabhupada was poetic. The way he would sit, the way he would pronounce, I mean, every little aspect, the way he would, all of his gestures, every aspect of Prabhupada was poetic. It really comes through very strongly in this particular purport. Only knowledge in devotional service can elevate one towards the path of liberation. So it's very important to cultivate that knowledge. Srila Prabhupada has given us full facility to do that. I mean, it's just an incredible array of wisdom which he has made available to us in the form of these transcendental literatures. I'm going to speak of all the thousands of letters that he wrote, all the wonderful conversations, lectures, his perfect example in all times, all places, and all circumstances. We have full facility here to cultivate transcendental knowledge, divya jnana. For what purpose? For becoming very humble, surrendered servants of the Lord. I remember Prabhupada one time said, you should always be studying and you should always be rendering service. I remember in my younger days I was always feeling, well, I want to study more, but they keep telling me to do the service, do the service, do the service, do the service. That was a conflict I had in my early days. I wanted to read more, but I was always being engaged in service. I even one time wrote Prabhupada a letter about this. One day I ducked out of our service that day was to go out, the devotees were all going out on Sankirtan activities by the library there in Manhattan. And I took the day off to write Prabhupada a letter about this. I wanted to write him a letter because it was disturbing me very much. I want to study more, but we're always being engaged in doing service. So I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I actually got on the subway and went over to Tompkins Square Park to the tree where Prabhupada preached. And I went to that tree, that spot, and I wrote Prabhupada a letter. And I said, I told him basically I wanted to have more time for reading and you know, see what he would say, because he's my spiritual master. I'm fully surrendered to whatever order he gives me. He said, actually, there is much time in the day for studying. But studying means, but he said, without practice, that study will become dry and useless. So, and then he said that I should simply follow whatever instructions I received from my temple president, my GBC, like that. He told me to be very, very obedient servant of the authorities, not to act independently. May he really train me. So nowadays when people say, yeah, the GBC, who cares about them? We don't want to listen to them. We don't want to listen to any authority. We'll just do our own thing. You know, I know that that's completely bogus because Prabhupada personally ordered me to follow the authorities. I was personally trained by Srila Prabhupada. I must obey this kind of authorities. So anyway, but still, that was always a conflict for me. Study, service. But then when I heard Prabhupada say that one should always be studying and always be engaged in rendering service, I was trying to figure out, well, how is that possible? How can you be constantly studying and constantly doing service? And then I realized that, just like you take a chemistry course, You see? There's the lecture section and there's the lab section. It's all part of the training. It's all part of becoming a master chemist. You have your that's our devotional service. We study the books, we hear the lectures, that's the lecture section. And then we have our practical activities, that's the lab. So actually, you're still studying when you're in the lab. You're actually, it's devotional service in practice by being very observant and aware of what you're doing when you're engaging in the practical activities. Then you're studying what it means to apply it and how it actually becomes practically manifest. So in this way, one can actually do that. One can be constantly studying and constantly engaged in service. In that way, you, as you're awakening the tendency to love Krishna, to love the spiritual master more and more, to love the devotees, then along with that, comes deeper and deeper understanding of the science of Krishna consciousness. So all of these things actually work together perfectly. It's a perfect system, absolutely perfect. It's flawless. There's no other science which is actually scientific. They use the word science very proudly, but actually it is not scientific. Their so-called science is very, very speculative. There's nothing really scientific about it. They simply make their theory. They promote it for some time until someone else comes along who's more expert at word jugglery, and that becomes considered science. Their science is whoever is the best word juggler, their jugglery is considered to be science. But that is quivering. That is simply quivering in the wind. The actual position is to come to an understanding of who I am, who is the Supreme, what is my relationship with the Supreme, how can I perfect that relationship. That is actual knowledge. Anything else is avidya. It's ignorance, it's illusion, it's nescience. So, by deeply studying and applying this wisdom, one will get newer and newer lights, day by day, moment by moment even, newer and newer lights of realization and understanding will become manifest. And that quivering quality in the winds of the modes of nature will gradually become subdued. And finally that quivering will become completely non-existent, completely eradicated, when one has fully awakened the dormant tendency to become a completely sold out lover of God. So, now I can ask if there's any questions. Yes.
You were saying yesterday in your class about the difference in attitude of Christians, for example, and Krishna conscious devotees. Christianity being very much based on fear, as far as going to hell. And so that quote you were making before from that European philosopher Kierkegaard.
Kierkegaard, yes.
He was referring to fear and trembling, actually. So that in that connection, he's expressing the attitude that in front of God there should be fear and trembling.
I never read the book, but
that's actually
that was his idea, was you should have fear and trembling.
You should have fear and trembling. Actually, this, even for example in Japan, they have the codex. In front, the rule is in front of the emperor, every subject should only approach the emperor with fear and trembling.
So, yes.
Because of the might of the,
yes, yes.
The emperor. Like, for example, if you misbehave, at least in the olden times, like If you do a slight mistake in front of the emperor, they will chop off your head. You're immediately condemned to die. That was the power of the emperor.
Yes,
like
yes.
Also the sultans in the Islamic world. If you would do any small mistake in the etiquette, that was your death sentence on the spot. You would be killed on the spot.
Wow.
So, in that sense, every person like who was subordinate, he would approach the emperor with fear and trembling because he would know, if I do even the smallest mistake, next moment I will be dead. So, but my question is, like in Krishna consciousness, we don't have that so much that aspect of approaching God with fear.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't there also a merit in, how to say, to have that type of
yes.
awe? Like
yes.
For example, when Arjuna was seeing the universal form, we in that connection we hear in Bhagavad Gita that actually Arjuna was actually trembling in fear. Because at that moment, usually we, like, because he was such an intimate devotee, he was not really conscious of the magnitude and the power of Krishna. But when he actually realized how great, how powerful, how magnanimous Krishna was, then also he was actually experiencing that fear and trembling. So sometimes I feel, even in, for us devotees, a little fear and trembling would do us good. I feel that sometimes it's me.
No, that must be there. That awe and reverence must be there. If one wants to, in other words, it can become, to not have that awe and reverence can lead to sahajaism. One has to, that's why we have to approach understanding the greatness of God first then. We don't jump immediately to the 10th canto. We approach very, very humbly through the first 9 cantos, gradually. That's why it's stated actually in taking darshan of the deity, one should begin meditating on the lotus feet. And then gradually you come up. So that concept is definitely there. If we think, as they say, familiarity breeds contempt. If one thinks that I can dispense with any sort of formalities and, simply have a buddy-buddy relationship with God, then forget it. You'll never become Krishna conscious. The Christians in the U.S., they have a popular bumper sticker, God is my co-pilot. Like we're on equal level, God is here and I'm here and we're co-piloting the plane. And such a conception will not allow one to become free from the quivering quality of material existence. By having, in that sense, a transcendental quiver, then you become free from the material quivering. Certainly with Prabhupada, there was, one had to, if there was any tendency towards familiarity, he would chastise. Sometimes people would ask Prabhupada different questions, in a more intimate things. He said, that you do not require. Prabhupada trained us to treat him with great awe and reverence as the representative of God, not as not just as some pal. So that training of being very transcendentally nervous that I might make some mistake is actually very good. Such that is transcendental anxiety. That I don't want to do anything that will disturb the spiritual master. I don't want to do anything that will disturb the Lord. I have to be very, very careful not to do something wrong. That's a very important thing. A very important thing. That's why there's so many in deity worship, there's so many seva aparat, so many huge lists. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. There's a huge list. Just for the very reason that you're pointing out. We have to be afraid of making mistakes. That's a fact. Just like I get scared when I give a class. I may say something wrong. You see? I do get scared when I give class. Especially when all in front of, you know, so many senior devotees, I get very scared. Oh my God, all these senior devotees here. So that's a healthy fear. One has to be very, very, very careful to do everything properly. It's a very good fear. Such fear will purify the heart. It chastens one. Actually, that sort of fear is very good. Any other questions?
Yeah, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, we can, however, see that this fear is not so developed. Because we have the example of Govinda.
In Lord Chaitanya, what was not developed?
This fear, this attitude of fear.
Fear was not.
It's not very much pronounced.
Yes.
Because there's the pastime of Govinda, Lord Chaitanya's servant.
Yes.
He didn't want to step over the Lord's body, right. So he stayed outside the room. But then also we hear that Lord Chaitanya would personally serve the devotees prasada, or he would even bring tilak for them or carry loads for them. I heard a class by Radhanath Swami yesterday. This is all related. And this fear aspect of worship of God is not there in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's.
That's right. That's right. Same thing with in the deity worship. With Baba said Gornatai, they can be just, they can, the deity, Gornatai deities, they can be worshipped simply by kirtan. So yes, that is the aspect. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when you bring Lord Chaitanya into the picture, then it becomes, there's just so much mercy, there's no fear, that's a thing. Becomes a very jolly, you know, fear-free atmosphere. Simply, kevala ananda kanda, simply nectar, simply bliss. That's right.
There are quite a few pastimes also with Ramachandra.
Mm-hmm.
He criticized Lord Chaitanya, so Lord Chaitanya said, well, okay, I will reduce my eating. So it's rather that Lord Chaitanya becomes subservient even to criticize, to critics.
That's right.
Not to speak of devotees, so many pastimes.
Well, this is the great beauty of our Krishna consciousness movement, is that mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That we can simply dive into this wonderful nectarian ocean. In other words, God is no longer the big policeman in the sky who's going to zap us. You see? Now God is the most beautiful, all-attractive person. That you're not obeying him out of fear, you're obeying him out of love. It's quite different in that sense. That's the big difference between Judeo-Christian tradition and Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Even other Vaishnavas, you see, like Narayan worship. This is a very, very special flavor in Lord Chaitanya's movement. That now one has the access to actually loving that most beautiful, wonderful, sublime person and doing everything out of affection for him. I remember Vishnu Jan Maharaj, he used to say, just give your love to Krishna. We have a tendency to love. All we have to do is repose that in Krishna. And then all the fear goes away. All fear is removed. Questions more? Oh, I saw your hand first. Go ahead.
Yeah. some new devotees from this time, they ask now why, because you say now that Prabhupada, he went to see all these pure devotees in ISKCON. But we see with the time past come that in Chennault, we don't see nobody with such qualities like Srila Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody of his disciples manifest these qualities from Srila Prabhupada. And so new devotees, they want to see these qualities.
Yes.
And these devotees, because the devotees are getting old. So,
what was the last statement?
The devotees are getting old now.
Yes, devotees are getting old.
The
yeah.
first generation
right.
of disciples from mm-hmm. Srila Prabhupada.
Dying off, actually. Not just getting old, they're dying off.
They're dying. But until now, we don't see really devotees who really have all these qualities. They have maybe one or two
mm-hmm.
qualities. But like a Srila Prabhupada, we don't see him.
Yes.
And so the devotees, they ask, why is that these devotees, nobody of them, they manifest these qualities from Srila Prabhupada?
Why they don't have?
Yeah, why they don't manifest like Srila Prabhupada? Because Srila Prabhupada was
perfect. Why we're not seeing the qualities of Prabhupada and his followers?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a big challenge for us, isn't it? That puts a big... that puts a big burden on us. I mean, what really gets me is the statement in the Nectar of Instruction that one should only take initiation from a Uttama Adhikari, otherwise you will suffer under his insufficient guidance. I just feel this huge weight on me. I have disciples. And they actually, you know, they should be having a guru who's an Uttama Adhikari. And so I know what you're talking about. I feel the same. I look at myself, I feel the same weight. The solution is we just have to become pure devotees. That's all. It's our duty to really be very seriously cultivating pure devotional service at every minute. It's our duty to pass on this legacy of what Prabhupada has given us. We have to really strive and beg for the mercy that our every thought, our every word, our every deed in all times, all places, and all circumstances can be 100% pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. It's only by his mercy that we can purely represent him. Our duty is to purely manifest as far as possible all the qualities of Srila Prabhupada in all of our thoughts, words, and deeds. So all we can do, and we're, you know, the word is mercy cases. I mean, we know our background. All we can do is beg for Prabhupada's mercy, that we can, as far as possible, purely represent him. Because to the extent that we purely represent him, to that extent our movement will be successful. And actually, there's a wonderful statement in this connection, which is one of my favorite statements. This is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada explains there that if a devotee of the Lord can chant the holy names without any offense, under his influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. So that means we have to really purify our chanting. We have to see, how am I committing namaparads? How can I avoid those namaparads? Because to the extent that we become pure chanters of the name, to that extent we're purely representing Srila Prabhupada, and we are actually we will have an uplifting, enlightening impact on the global consciousness. So this is our duty. If we're feeling, well, the young devotees aren't seeing the qualities of Prabhupada manifested in us, so that means we got to do something about it. It's never too late. One may think, well, you know, I spent all these years in Krishna consciousness but not purely absorbed, you know, maintaining this desire, that desire. It's too late now. No. It's never too late to kick out the quivering qualities it's not too late to get free from these quivering qualities and become purely established in Krishna consciousness. Maharaj Katvanga, he became a pure devotee within 1 second. So it's never too late to become a pure devotee. We have to strive for it. We shouldn't think, well, it's not possible to get rid of my anarthas, what can I do? No. We have to be working to get rid of all of our anarthas at every minute. That's our responsibility. As you've so nicely pointed out, the younger devotees want to see where are those Prabhupada-like qualities in the Prabhupada followers. If this process works, then why don't see the divine qualities in the older devotees, you see? Now we have to develop those divine qualities as far as possible. We have to do that. We have to be... Actually, there's a nice quote in this connection. Prabhupada said, you're always saying, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Why don't you become glorious? You see? Because if the followers are glorious, what is that? A tree is judged by its fruits? You see? If people see the fruit of the Prabhupada tree, the Prabhupada tree has produced so many wonderful fruits. That will attract the whole world. You see? So we really have an obligation not to continue quivering in anartha loka. We really have an obligation to become very serious about Krishna consciousness. It's never too late. It's never too late. Yes?
May I make a comment?
Yes, please.
I think the thing that you pointed out is something which is, how to say, very prevalent amongst devotees. We have, for example, in ISKCON, we have this, or outside of ISKCON, the problem with the Ritvik people. And amongst the Ritvik people, there's most of them, or at least are in the beginning, they are disgruntled Prabhupada disciples. And the problem they have is they say nobody can be a guru except Prabhupada, because their expectation is unless you are like Prabhupada, you cannot be a guru. But that consideration is actually, the wrong concept. Nobody can be like Prabhupada. Like a person like Prabhupada, an acharya like Prabhupada, he is, if you try to compare yourself with him, it's quite impossible. Like even in other traditions, like for example in Christianity, it's like a person like Jesus Christ, he comes along, like 2,000 years ago, and still, Christianity is going on 2,000 years later on the strength of such an extraordinary personality. So in the same way, Lord Chaitanya came 500 years ago. Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada, he took Lord Chaitanya's message all around the world. What he has done, cannot a person of his caliber, of spiritual caliber, is not coming along every second, every generation. So, but that doesn't mean that in the meantime, those, for example, who have been disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they cannot act in the capacity of passing on Krishna consciousness to the next generation. It's just like, for example, like the example that comes to my mind, if you have a sound transmission, like, for example, a radio transmission, you may have a very high-class sound system with high fidelity, all the different, things. Basically, or you can have a transistor radio, which you buy for, $5 or $10, and it may not have the same range of fidelity, but the same message, the same, for example, if you're listening to the news on the high fidelity system, you're getting exactly the same news, or if you listen to it on the $10 small pocket radio, it may, the sound may not be exactly of the same quality, but the news, the message is exactly the same. So in the same way, if you, I think it's the wrong attitude or the wrong approach to compare Srila Prabhupada's disciples and say, oh, they haven't come up to the standard of Srila Prabhupada, they are not 100% Srila Prabhupada. That cannot be expected. But the most important thing is that in their example and in the message that they're giving, they're identical. They may not be of the same exact spiritual caliber as far as like such an extraordinary person as Prabhupada. And this is the problem that the Ritvik devotees have. They think, oh, how can he be a guru? He's not like Prabhupada, he's putting himself on the Vyasa sign, and he's accepting a god, and he's accepting work. And so they become very upset about this, because their conception is that unless you become like practically a carbon copy, a clone of Srila Prabhupada, then you cannot, then anyone who is practically accepting the position of accepting disciples and preaching on Prabhupada's behalf, he's an imposter. But that's not the case. There are different personalities. Even if you see, for example, in our line, if you take one generation back, Bhaktisiddhanta was completely different from Prabhupada. Or Gokishodas Babaji, he was just he was sitting practically completely remote. He didn't want to accept any disciples. So we see there are different categories or different natures devotees who accept at a certain time a particular position or a particular service. And so also Srila Prabhupada's disciples, those who have taken upon themselves, how to say, to execute the order of taking that responsibility, we should respect them and honor them for taking on that, like you said, that burden. It's a very huge burden to be in that position. So we shouldn't blame them on top of it for not being exactly like Prabhupada. That cannot be expected.
Actually, even of the previous acharyas, there was no one who did what Prabhupada did. Even the previous acharyas, and we're not able. Actually, Prabhupada said that he accomplished what Lord Chaitanya didn't even do. Lord Chaitanya spread Krishna consciousness in India only. So Prabhupada is incredibly unique position in all of Vaishnava history. There's no guru that ever was that empowered in the history of Vaishnavism, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. There's no way that anybody, even the previous acharyas, didn't do that. That's a very, very wonderful point you have made, Prabhu.
Is it possible for someone to compare Nitya Siddha with Kripa Siddhas?
The what?
Is it correct to compare Nitya Siddha and the Kripa Siddhas? have the Kripa Siddhas come to the level of Nitya Siddhas,
yeah.
Srila Prabhupada?
Yes, I mean, with somebody, it's not that someone has to descend from the spiritual world to be a spiritual master. Prabhupada is an eternal associate of the Lord, who was sent here on the order of Krishna to, as Prabhupada told Bhavananda Prabhu, you go there and write those books Krishna ordered him. These are very special books. These are, in the history of the world, there is no books like these books. So, you can't duplicate, you can't clone that. You can't, because that's a special person who was deputed by Krishna to come here and establish this. But that doesn't mean that someone who isn't on that same level cannot perform the functions of a spiritual master. Prabhupada actually, the Ritviks say only one acharya, you see. But Prabhupada told us in Mayapur, he said, now we are 10,000. And then we will go to 100,000. And then to 1 million. And then to 10 million. He said, there will be no scarcity of acharyas. Prabhupada's vision, yes, yes. He's not in the clock there.
That's okay. It's a special day, so please.
Okay, so Prabhupada's vision was 10 million acharyas. So we really are all meant to become acharyas in this movement. This is supposed to be a movement of acharyas. One founder acharya and 10 million acharyas. That was Prabhupada's vision. Yad yad acharati shrestas tattareve tarodhyana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tavnanavarartate. You see? Whatever the great man does, the common people follow. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary act, all the world pursues. So, it's a very simple thing. This comes back again to the quote I gave from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. According to one's level of purity, you have that kind of an, you naturally have an impact on the planet, on the consciousness. So, the more we can manifest the pure consciousness, the more we can become acharya-like in our attitudes, our speech, and our activities, that will be the success of our movement. It's actually guaranteed by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami that that day will come when the whole world becomes inundated by this movement, Krishna consciousness movement. Satjana durjana pangu jadda andagana prema vanvaya dubaila jagatera jana. You see? It doesn't matter if you're satjana, you're pious, durjana, an impious rascal, whether you're pangu, lame, jadda, invalid, or anda, blind. Prema vanyaya duvaila, you will be drowned, everyone, jagatera jana, everyone throughout the whole universe will be drowned by this tidal wave, Krishna consciousness movement. So, there will be powerful acharyas after Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, how will Krishnadas Kaviraj's Goswami prediction come true? Whether we will be those powerful acharyas or a future generation, there are going to be powerful acharyas in the line of Srila Prabhupada, not on his level, but as his subordinate servants. There will be powerful Prabhupada Anuga acharyas who will, in fact, bring about the fulfillment of the prediction of Krishnadas Kaviraj. So, it's up to, if, you know, my personal ambition is that I want to see this movement. It's my, you know, if I could have my wish fulfilled, I would, before I die, I'd like to see the whole world become Krishna conscious. It seems like a foolish dream, but, you know, I'm an idealist, what can I say? It's my nature. I have an idealistic nature, and I always think in terms of, you know, very idealistic terms. I'm 99.99% sure that I will die without having seen my desire, but at least I can, it's a nice thought. But I want to see this. But it'd be wonderful if Krishna would fulfill my desire. I beg Krishna, actually, in that way. My dear Lord, please bless me. I can live long enough to see the whole world become Krishna conscious before I leave the body. I know probably I won't get my wish fulfilled, but it's, you know, it's a nice wish.
You may not have it fulfilled in this lifetime.
Huh?
You may not have it fulfilled this lifetime, but there is more than one lifetime.
That's true. I mean, we can, you know... Janme, janme, Prabhu said. Actually, many years ago, I made a vow when we were doing a BTG marathon. There was a BTG had gone out of print, and there was a marathon to sign up subscribers to bring it back into print. So my wife and I actually quit my job and went full-time signing up subscribers. And my wife and I were the number one and number two in the whole world in the marathon. At that time, I made a vow to fire myself up. I said, may I take birth after birth after birth until BTG becomes the world's most popular magazine. So I don't know if Krishna's going to hold me to that, but he could, you know. He could hold me to that. Because I made a solid vow at that time, you know, in the mood of Sankirtan fever, you know.
is to live and to see the whole world to be Krishna conscious. This is the second vow that you took.
Yeah. So yeah, I do have a desire. I really would like.
So
I mean, there was the reason I joined this movement. Actually, I was a 1960s countercultural revolutionary. That was my whole mood, you know. And I saw that Prabhupada was the only one who really had it together to really revolutionize the planet. That's why I joined, actually. I could see this is the actual movement that can completely transform the human society. So I've always had that revolutionary, you know, vision for this movement. And I just pray that we'll really be successful in doing what Prabhupada told us. And actually, it was a wonderful quote, and I'll wrap it up here because I know the day is rolling on. But in Bombay, he told us this wonderful, wonderful instruction. He said, "The world is being managed by rogues and demons. Now you make your life successful and you take the management." Can you imagine? Prabhupada told us that we have to manage this planet. We have to become so fixed in Krishna consciousness that we can actually give proper guidance to every institution on this planet. The governments, the educational institutions, the cultural institutions, religious institutions. We have to become so fixed as Vaishnava Brahmins, you see, that we can actually properly guide every single institution on this planet. So anyway, I'll stop. Oh, okay.
There's two points actually I wanted to mention. Mm-hmm. First of all, of course, I wanted to thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank Chakravarti also for this point that he brought up.
Wonderful point.
Essential, very essential.
Yeah.
For the understanding of the general, hearers. And also maybe for the understanding of those who have taken up the responsibility and the burden of being guru.
Yeah.
Because even for them, it's important to...
No, it's a great encouragement. It's like I feel like he's blessing me in my service.
Because otherwise it's like almost a hopeless situation, thankless and hopeless situation. And because I'm sure everyone in this position realizes his shortcomings, and if the request or the duty is to come up to this, forget it. You may have to just, because it's not going to be. If we consider what he said. I mean, even Srila Prabhupada being here, he never tried to be like Lord Chaitanya, for example, or something like this.
Yeah.
So this is, therefore, I wanted to thank him also very much for this point. The other thing I wanted to you mentioned that Srila Prabhupada ordered you to give you this instruction that you should follow your
authority. That's right.
And even though you felt that the GBC may not be perfect, but this is the system and all this.
That's right.
So, I would like very much to ask you. See, when I invite persons like you to come to Germany and take tours and say, there's a certain, it's you're on a mission, so to say. You are on a mission Germany.
Right? Yes, our mission is to help you to make the German yatra more successful.
Success is not my concern.
All right.
Success is that the devotees get the message that Prabhupada wanted this movement to be. Because nowadays everybody is very much like new age, wellness, love, everything is okay.
I know.
And they imagine that this is how Prabhupada was.
Right.
But they don't realize that Prabhupada actually wanted something else.
Right.
And this message has to be given to the general population.
Yeah.
And so the reason why I'm inviting these gurus and swamis to come to help us is to give this message from the Vyasa-san. Unless somebody, it's nice to talk about Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world, but that doesn't help us really get this movement together, and it doesn't really help the devotees to come to the point of their devotional activities.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I'm asking you to please, as you go around, to please maybe as much as possible get this message across of what Prabhupada's vision and wish is by giving this example for yourself.
Well, that's very much summarized in one of those final instructions he gave. Is that your love for me will be seen by how much you work together cooperatively. So cooperation means there's some, you know, there's some authority that we all agree to accept, namely the GBC body, and we all work under their direction.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's like you said, it's just a new age,
yes,
you know, thing. Yes. I'm okay, you're okay. You know, just like now in some quarters we see male and female devotees hugging at festivals, you know, which is completely against Prabhupada's instructions. It's shocking to see how much they can deviate, and it's okay.
Yes.
It's shocking to me.
So, of course, when we tell the general hearers that we have to follow the GBC, but yet at the same time, it's not that the GBC is like faultless or anything,
mm-hmm,
you know? But then it is, if somebody has... We have to work on rectifying ourselves,
yeah,
and on making it better. The answer is not to criticize and leave and do something else besides. The answer is, then help us to become what we're supposed to be.
Prabhupada gave us a perfect system. I mean, Prabhupada told us we have a right to lobby the GBC. If we feel the GBC is wrong, we have a voice. We can lobby the GBC and, you know, make our points to them,
yes,
and they will consider. And I've seen practically, there was one point I felt was wrong. I actually went to Mayapur, I lobbied, and the GBC accepted my point.
Yes.
So it's not some kind of a rigid, draconian,
yes,
thing. It's a wonderful, dynamic, loving, you know, transcendental system that Prabhupada created for this movement to go on.
When our preachers go around, they have to be very much aware that by now, the listeners that we have in these gatherings, they are not only consisting on persons who have been practicing Krishna consciousness maybe at home or are sympathizing with our philosophy. We have a lot of Christians that are 100% Christians or convinced about their religion. We have now a lot of Muslims coming in and all this. So
and all the temples are just here?
I don't know if it is. We are doing, on the national level, we are doing a lot of interreligious dialogue, and it's going to
come out
more and more.
This is the perfection of Islam and the perfection of Christianity.
Yes. We still have in our classes very stereotyped kinds of sentences that we say, you know. For example, sometimes, you know, we have the tendency to say, oh yeah, the Christians, they do like this, you know. So we have to become very, like even when Chakravarti before made his wonderful point, he had one sentence in there. He says, in the... something about the Islamic something, he said. So I'm begging very, very much that we have to become unsectarian in our speeches. Because, like for example, yesterday in this group, we had two persons, they are Muslims of Afghanistan, and they are religious persons. One of our best friends, we have about 50 or 100 Muslims that are our best friends that come to a program worshipping these deities. Believers, Muslim believers that make the prayer 5 times a day. So if we in our speeches by accident just leave one sentence like the Muslims they do like this or you know something, because this is a killer. So I'm asking all our preachers to be aware of this, that not to use other religions to make a negative point, for example.
Yeah, actually, this is this is the whole sectarian cloud that the world is very much entrapped in present time, to think that there are different religion.
Yes.
And religion is one. So anyone from whatever culture or tradition, if they're actually developing love of God, then we accept them. They are God brothers.
Yes.
Doesn't matter whatever. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, interestingly enough, I don't know if you've heard, but the Salvation Army, it's a big thing in the U.S. Charity organization. They used to go out and sing Christmas carols. Now, you know, Kali Yuga, you don't see it, but they used to go out. So he said the Salvation Army band is a manifestation of the Sankirtan movement, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, yeah, we actually appreciate the devotional sentiments of Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, or whatever. I know when we were getting ready to get on the airplane, we were flying from Bombay to Brisbane. And right there in the airport, there was a Muslim bowing down, doing his prayers. I thought, this is wonderful. His devotees were a little embarrassed to, you know, some people are afraid to you know, take their bead bag to work to chant japa during their break in front of all the other corporate employees. But the Muslims will bravely bow down anywhere. So actually, we have a lot to learn from our Muslim brothers, you see, in that sense. We shouldn't be so culturally isolated that we can't utilize anything and everything to advance our own Krishna consciousness, even what we can see in the Muslims and Christians and Jews, etc. That's right.
And it's not just simply for us, it's also if they come, if they have found the way to our worship days, and then they hear by accident some word, some sentence, then we are robbing them from the opportunity to become Krishna conscious.
Yeah, if we're talking like that, that means that we're cult members, that's all.
Yeah.
We have to be convinced ourselves that this is not a cult. This is actually the universal science of God consciousness. Okay. We ourselves have to come out of cult consciousness. It's a very important thing, yeah. Do you want to be a cult member? A brainwashed cult member? Or do you want to be an enlightened spiritual being? You know, your choice. That's right.
Thank you, Guru.
Hare Krishna. All right, we'll stop here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.